Back to My Garden, episode 61.
Welcome to Back to My Garden. Discover your passion for gardening. Here's Dave Ledoux.
Are you concerned about toxic chemicals, GMOs, and frankenfood? Don't panic. Grow organic. Discover my new resource for organic gardening. Go to www.backtomygarden.com/myorganic. Yes, yes, yes. Attention garden lovers. Do you want to save time, save money, and have your most amazing garden ever? Receive free tips, strategies, and gardening techniques from amazing gardeners around the world. Join the VIP club for free today at www.backtomygarden.com/VIP. Well, good morning, good afternoon, or good evening, depending on where you are in the world when you listen to this. I'm Dave Ledoux, and welcome to another edition of Back to My Garden. We have a fantastic guest today joining us from Tennessee. Aaron is a clay soil gardener from Tennessee. His popular gardening blog has a massive resource list of U.S. botanical gardens. His goals in life include inspiring others to pick up a shovel, a watering can, a seed packet, and to cultivate a little corner of earth. We have a ton of stuff to discuss. I want to welcome to the show Mr. Aaron Dalton. Aaron, welcome to Back to My Garden.
Thanks so much for having me, Dave. I'm excited to be here and happy to talk with you. And I look forward to speaking about all the gardening topics you have in mind.
Awesome. Now, I gave you a brief introduction. I want to hear your story, and I know our listeners want to connect with you as well. Aaron, take a minute or two and just share with us a little bit about your background and how did you get into gardening?
Sure. Well, I grew up in Pennsylvania, in southeast Pennsylvania to be specific, outside of Philadelphia. And I would say it was my mom who first got me interested in gardening. She gave me a little patch of land by the back door of our house, and I grew radishes and strawberries. I'm sure a lot of children maybe have that experience, and that kind of got me hooked when I was a little kid, because if you can grow something sweet, you know, when the chipmunks didn't eat it, I got some strawberries, so that was good. And my parents had a pretty big garden as well when I was young, and we had some woods behind our house, so there were always, you know, woodchucks and other critters and rabbits who were trying to take some of the produce, but I certainly remember them growing tomatoes and corn and beans and peas and that sort of thing. So it was nice to always have that fresh produce from the garden. And then I grew up and I moved to New York City for 10 years and did not have the garden, and really missed that connection to nature, missed that connection to the land. And so when I had a chance to move back to a more natural area in Tennessee 4 or 5 years ago, and now I have had my own patch of land for about 3 years here in Tennessee to garden. That's just been a real joy for me to be able to reconnect with the land and rediscover all of its bounty.
Fantastic. Now, for those of you listening to me and Aaron talk about gardening, and if you're in your car, please do not take notes. Aaron and I will put all the links and resources in the show notes at backtomygarden.com. Make sure you follow Aaron on Twitter at Garden of Aaron. There's two A's in Aaron. And Aaron's got a great blog at www.gardenofaaron.com. Yep. Maybe we can start there, Aaron. I was looking on your blog, and you're very deliberate in mentioning that you're a clay soil gardener.
Yes.
What has that experience been like for you?
Well, anyone who has gardened on heavy clay probably knows what it's like. And for those who don't have heavy clay, I'm very envious of you. I think heavy clay, I'm sure if you have sand, you have your own set of challenges. If you have loam, you're very lucky. I'm presuming most of the folks listening to your show have some interest in gardening, so they know there's three basic types of soil: sand, which tends to drain very quickly, and very light soil tends to be sort of the, one of the main soil types that people consider, and then loam, which is sort of a nice mix of sand and clay and organic matter, and people who have that are blessed, and then clay, which is, you know, very, very heavy, very sticky, very small soil particles that all stick together, and it's got some good things. It's got a lot of nutrients usually that are concentrated in that soil, but it can be really hard to work with. It can hold on to water as well, so you end up with plants. If you live in a wet environment, like here in Tennessee, we get a lot of rain in I think it's about 45 inches of rain annually, and a lot of that's concentrated in the fall, winter, and spring. And yeah, that cold, wet soil can really be a death sentence for a lot of plants, especially if you're doing any zone pushing and you're trying to cultivate plants that are at the limits of their hardiness. And then, you know, in the summertime, when you have drought, like we have here a lot, and the temperature climbs into 90, 95, 100 degrees, then it just bakes. And you really could probably make pottery out of it if you needed to. So I think there's a couple ways people deal with that. Some people go to raised beds, which I've tried, you know, just try to build on top of the clay. Don't even try to deal with it. But, of course, you have a smaller sort of area to work with, smaller area for your root zone, unless the roots go down into the clay. And you also have problems with that drying out in the summer. At least I did. The raised beds, they tend to lose water quickly. Some people try to do intensive amending of the soil, which I think is kind of a back-breaking, thankless task, unless you have a lot of money and you can pay someone else to do it. And then the third thing some people try to do, and this is sort of where I fall in it, is you try to work with it. You know, there's obviously plants that naturally grow in clay. It's true that where I live and where a lot of other people live in America, if you live in a recently built house and a relatively new development, my house was built in 2006, then the soil is probably even worse because it's been compacted by construction equipment. But again, I'm trying to work with that, and I think a lot of people are in the same boat that I'm in, and I'm hoping that my experiences, both my successes and my failures, have a lot that they can teach other people and they can learn from my mistakes.
Wow, that was an awesome blast of info. I'm actually taking notes while you're giving me the bullet points. That was fantastic. You know, three types of soil and the unique benefits of each. I wrote something down that you said, zone pushing.
Yes.
Would you say that's something you experiment with?
Well, I was doing a little bit of experimenting with it. First couple of years, I was gardening here. And then last winter, the polar vortex, you know, affected a lot of the country, a lot of the eastern two-thirds of the country, I guess. That set me back a little bit with that. We got down to -2 Fahrenheit was our low temperature here in my zone. So that's considered a USDA zone 6, 6B, I think, which is when you have a low between -5 and 0 degrees Fahrenheit. And so I had a lot of plants that were, you know, I had some plants, I should say, that were rated zone 7, which is 0 to 10 degrees Fahrenheit is an average low. And so some of those plants were severely damaged. I had, actually, I didn't put it in. It was here when I got here, but I had a few plants of something called Indian hawthorn. I think the Latin name is Raphiolepis indica, as the name suggests. I think it comes from India. And so it's a plant that loves hot weather, and that was totally blasted and burned back, and I ended up removing them. They might have survived if I cut them all the way back, but I just decided I was going to try to go with more natives, which is something else we can discuss. I'm not a diehard native, you know, exclusive gardener, but I do think it's good to incorporate natives when you can because they tend to be well adapted to the area and the soil and all that. And so I don't do a ton of it, but you know, I'm also interested in. In plants, I think sometimes you can put in even tropical plants or things that I don't do container gardening really, but I think you can put in things that are annuals in your zone. But if they're good self-seeders, like zinnia or cosmos, bipinnatus, I'm a big fan of both of those two flowers. You know, they're native, I think, both to Mexico, so they'd love much warmer areas. And I don't know actually if they're annual or perennial down there. But they'll live for you. You know, they'll give you years and years of color, and they're both really good. I mean, cosmos attracts bees, small bees especially, which I try to do in my garden, try to support the bees because they're struggling. And zinnias, of course, are probably one of the best flowers for attracting that I've found anyway for attracting butterflies. And so you know, you can have plants that are not gonna. I know a lot of people are kind of don't like annuals because they think it's a lot of work and then you have to redo it every year. But sometimes if you're willing to tolerate a little bit of randomness in your garden, you can have that color and you can just sow them once. I planted cosmos once and I get it back every year. I planted zinnias once and they come back every year.
People love on the show to eavesdrop or sneak a peek at other people's gardens. Check out Aaron's blog at gardenofaaron.com. It sounds to me that you love color. If you're bringing up tropicals from Mexico, what are your neighbors? What's the impact like?
Well, I have one neighbor who I think She loves gardening too, and I think she's derived some real inspiration from what I'm doing, which is I feel excited about, and I love the fact that I can inspire her to do some things. She put in some gora, which is actually a perennial, although one that struggles a bit here with the wet clay soils in the winter. I think gora lindheimeri is the Latin name. Butterfly flowers is one of the common names, not because it attracts butterflies, but because the flowers kind of dip and sway in the wind, and that'll flower all season long. So she added some of that. The other neighbors, to be honest, it tends to be more traditional landscaping, which, as you and I discussed before this podcast started, Dave, is something that I really feel passionate about. I think too many times, because a lot of people shop at the so-called big box stores for their plants, for their garden, or they hire landscapers who shop at the big box stores, people tend to use the same 5, 10, 15 plants in the landscape over and over again. And those differ by area, obviously. Here in Tennessee, you see a lot of boxwoods for evergreen structure. You see a lot of Leland cypress as a tall evergreen. You see a lot of knockout roses for the color, but none of those really support much in the way of wildlife. And knockout roses, for example, they look great, but I don't think I've ever seen a bee on a knockout rose. So if you're gardening in part because you want to have a living landscape around your house, like I do, and that's a big thing, yes, I love color, but I'm not so interested in a sterile landscape, which just, you might as well have plastic flowers is sort of how I feel about it. So I think I look for plants like cosmos, like zinnia. Vitex is another plant that's sort of fantastic. It's a small shrub or tree in our zone. It gets much larger. I think it gets to about 15, 25 feet. A little bit further south where it doesn't die back, but I think it can survive as a dieback shrub into like zone 6, maybe even into zone 5. But it's got these great purple or like kind of lavender flower spikes, and these large bees just go crazy for that. So yeah, I love color, but I love color that can do something, that can feed bees or can feed tiny little wasps or butterflies, or the seeds will attract birds or something. And if it can do many of those things, then that's even better.
Mm. Aaron, walk me through your garden from this season. What brought you joy, and did anything frustrate you?
Ooh, yeah, both. Well, let's see. One thing that one plant that I've added this year, which has brought me a lot of joy, is switchgrass. It's a native grass to a lot of North America, I think. Panicum virgatum is the Latin name. I'm using a couple different cultivars. One's called North Wind, which I think won a Perennial Plant Association Plant of the Year award recently, and another one called Heavy Metal. And these are great. They're just incredibly tough, from what I've seen. We didn't have a really strong drought. We didn't have a really hard drought this year to test them, but I can tell you that they seem to survive the heat, the cold, the clay soil, the wetness. We had about 6 inches of rain in the last week here, and I've got, holes that I had dug in my backyard that are completely filled with water for days. So you can tell the drainage is horrible. And the grasses seem to love it. And they grow about maybe 4 feet tall. They stay in a pretty tight clump, at least so far. This is my first year with them. They can take heavy, strong winds, which is another challenge I have in my garden. I'm on a hilltop, so not a lot of stuff to block the wind. So I love those. And other things I've really enjoyed, another native that I like a lot, I had a few of them before, but I added some more this past spring, is Eastern Red Cedar, Juniperus virginiana. Again, it's a really tough plant, great for screening, great for privacy, and it's got juniper berries, which I think are actually small cones, even though we call them berries. And those are supposed to do a good job of attracting cedar waxwing birds. I haven't actually seen any yet, but I'm hopeful. And in terms of things that frustrated me this year, I really kind of went all out with viburnums. I heard a lot of great things about viburnums, and so I tried several different kinds. Viburnum prunifolium, one called Allegheny viburnum, Prague viburnum, and Viburnum dentatum. And of those, several of them died. I don't think they may be tough plants, but especially the non-natives seem to have a harder time with the clay soil and the wetness and the drought. The only one that I've really loved has been the arrowwood viburnum, Viburnum dentatum, which actually I bought last year, and then it got really cold, you know, with the polar vortex, and I left them in my garage. I feel real bad about this. I kind of tortured them, and I pretty much forgot to water them much. I watered them maybe two or three times. I thought they were dead. I was like, should I even bother planting these? But I went ahead and planted them, and sure enough, they actually both resprouted from the ground level, and one of them especially, I think it's called Chicago Luster is the cultivar name. It must have put on 3 feet of new growth. Very, very healthy. No insect problems whatsoever. You know, because it died all the way back, I didn't have any flowers or anything this year, but they're supposed to have these great flowers. I've got a couple different cultivars so they can hopefully cross-pollinate and hopefully get some berries for the birds next year.
Amazing. You actually shocked me when you said you really didn't have the drought. I know the U.S. just got hammered in parts with the dryness and...
Well, you know, you're right, Dave, we probably did have some drought. I was actually away for a good part of September, and I think we only had a quarter inch of rain all of September. Then, like I said, we've had 6 inches this past week. And I think it was pretty dry in July and August. I guess it was more in past years, like in 2012, when we had that awful combination of the heat and the drought. So you're right, probably I just didn't notice the drought as much. But I also, and this is something I do in my garden, I do go out and water time to time with a hose, especially if it's something I've newly planted. But again, I'm a big believer in low input gardening. So try to find plants that are going to survive without a lot of coddling. You shouldn't ever have to spray, in my opinion. If you're not gardening, you know, to feed yourself, there's no reason to spray pesticides. I mean, if there's a little bit of cosmetic damage to a plant, that's too bad. But I mean, it's not worth all the potential harm to beneficial insects, you know, to bees, that sort of thing. And again, in terms of with the human population, the size it is in America and in Canada, I guess, but especially, I mean, in the U.S. and in Canada, you know, I just think we're putting so much pressure on so many resources that to use, you know, water, especially like you said, sometimes there's drought situations. Just try to put in things that can fend for themselves. So I definitely, when I'm evaluating a plant, I've got a whole list of criteria that I go down, and one of them is, can it survive? You know, is it drought tolerant? And if it needs a lot of supplemental water, I'm probably not going to put it in.
To change gears a bit on you, I was surprised on your blog, you have a massive free resource list of all the botanical gardens.
I do. So Garden of Erin is my blog. And I should mention, I'm a professional writer by trade. I'm not a professional gardener. Amateur gardener, I guess, a little bit. But professional writer, freelance writer, business writing. Used to do a lot of journalism, but now I'm sort of more in the business writing and ghostwriting business. And so when I sort of became real passionate about gardening, I thought, well, you know, I'll try to use my whatever writing talent I have to try to educate people. So, yeah, so I started this blog, a couple years ago, and I've been really gratified with the response it's gotten so far. And I think a few hundred thousand visitors so far. I think it's around, you know, 30,000 a month or something like that. But so, yeah, I decided, what else can I do besides? I'm not arrogant enough to think that I have all the answers. I know that I have a small subset of answers. Whatever information I can provide, I hope is useful to people. But I also try to provide a lot of other resources for gardeners. And some of that's linking to some of my other favorite garden blogs, because I do have other, you know, my sort of reading list of blogs that I like. And then some of it's botanical gardens, which I think are a fantastic resource. And I also do have links to Arboretum as well, and to historical gardens. And I love visiting botanic gardens. I think you can get a lot of great ideas, especially, like I said, in terms of finding maybe plants that you hadn't thought about. So adding some biodiversity to your landscape. And you know, big believer in doing that whenever you have a chance. Doug Tallamy is an author and a researcher who I really respect, who's talked a lot about the sort of importance of having biodiversity in your landscape, because again, you can just do a much better job of supporting birds and bees and caterpillars. Again, kind of getting back to this idea of pesticides, a lot of people see damage to a plant and maybe they think, oh, this is a problem, I've got to spray for it. But the caterpillars or other insects that are eating those leaves could very well become food for birds that you like to watch. And or they could be eaten by beneficial insects, like, you know, ladybugs will come after aphids. Or, you know, just this year I started seeing, as my garden has started to mature a little bit and get more diverse, this is the first year I've seen praying mantises in the garden a few different times, especially on the Vitex bush, because there's so many insects that come to that bush. They'll just hang out on the flower spikes and wait for insects to arrive. And I was just doing some pruning on the bush yesterday because it is a young vitex, and it grows so fast. This plant's probably going from about 2 feet tall to maybe six feet tall in a couple of years, 6-7 feet tall. And it was, I think, a little top heavy, and we were having these huge winds a couple days ago, you know, wind gusts 30, 40 miles an hour. So I wanted to prune it a little bit so that I was just worried it was going to catch it like a sail, and it was rocking back and forth. And I found this kind of ball, or it's hard to describe, but sort of attached to one of the branches. I had no idea what this was. I thought, is this a problem? I mean, your first instinct a lot of times as a gardener is, ooh, this looks wrong. I should prune it out. And then I didn't do anything. I didn't touch it. And I was reading a book yesterday, a gardening book, and I came across a picture in the book, and it actually, I think what this is a praying mantis egg sac. And so I feel really, you know, like I dodged a bullet there. I almost pruned out which, you know, I should have left, because it's a native beneficial predator insect that, you know, I kept, and I'm so excited as reproducing in the garden.
Very cool.
Yeah.
They're neat looking. Real quick on pruning. Do you have a personal opinion when it comes to pruning? There's so many old wives' tales, like never prune in a month ending and why and things like that. How do you prune?
Well, again, I feel like I'm still in the learning phase on that. I don't really love that formal look, so I tend to probably err on the side of not pruning as much. I think, you know, if there's things like it sort of depends a lot on the plant. I mean, there's some plants that, for example, a plant that I love is coral honeysuckle. It's a native plant. It's a vine. Lanicera sempervirens is the Latin name. There's a couple different, there's a number of different cultivars. I think Major Wheeler is one of the really good ones. This is a plant that will have red, where I live, and I think certainly further south, but also further north, it's going to have these kind of reddish-orange trumpet-shaped flowers pretty much all year. I mean, it starts blooming here very early spring, February, March, kind of depending on how warm it is. It's still blooming now. It's bloomed through the entire year, basically, and it'll probably bloom for another month or so. Sort of semi-evergreen. It does a great job of attracting hummingbirds, which are, of course, delightful to watch in the garden. And now, this is the first year. I've had the plant really for about 3 years now, but it's gotten quite mature. And a lot of hummingbirds visited this year, more than I'd ever seen before. And they pollinate it, and so now it has these beautiful red berries too, which I assume will attract birds. Anyway, talk about pruning. You can cut back on this plant whenever. It's so tough that you can hack it back. I cut it all the way back to the ground, and pretty much I'm about a foot off the ground, and it's up about, grown about 6, 7, 8 feet, and wrapped twines around the balcony, around the railing on the porch, I should say. And then things like Vitex, you can prune really a lot. Of course, you have to be really careful when you're pruning something like an evergreen, a conifer, junipers. You know, a lot of people try to do a hard prune on those, and if you cut back into the wood where there's no needles, they're basically not, they don't have those dormant buds, is my understanding of it. So you can end up with a kind of bare, ugly space if you prune back too far. Another thing you see a lot here in Tennessee is a crepe myrtle. It's a very popular tree. It's an exotic tree, but one that's incredibly tough, does really well here. I can't really fault people for planting it because of all the challenges people have here. And it'll take the clay soil, the heat, the drought, the cold, a little bit cold sensitive. So you have to depend on the kind of plant you have. But people prune that back every year really hard. And it's a process that people who disagree with call crepe murder, because they mutilate the trees, they feel like. And I do agree that it looks really ugly. These are trees that they tend to leaf out really late in the spring anyway. So you're looking at kind of a mutilated tree for, you know, a bare mutilated tree for 6 months out of the year if you prune those back too hard. So I would say, in general, just try to pick the right plant and the right size plant for the space, and save yourself some trouble if you can by not setting yourself up for a situation where you're going to have to prune too much. And keep in mind that when you see a plant described in a catalog or on a tag, it'll say, you know, this plant grows 10 feet tall by 5 feet wide. But the plant lives for 50 years or something like that. The plant is probably going to reach that. From what I've read, those plant tags describe the plant size after 10 years. So if your plant lives for 50 years, it's not like it's going to stop growing after 10 years. It's probably going to keep growing. Now, the growth rate may slow down a bit, but I'm just saying you should probably try to budget for some additional size beyond that if you don't want to have to prune all the time.
Awesome tips. Tremendous. Let's take a minute to thank our sponsors and then come back and play five quick questions. What's the hottest trend in gardening? I think the hottest trend is aquaponics. Can you really grow a massive garden powered by fish? Find out more and discover the secrets to building fish-powered gardens at www.backtomygarden.com/fish. Do you love gardening? It pays to be a garden blogger. Get my simple 5-step system for creating your own second income doing what you love part-time. Download instantly for free my garden blogger blueprint at www.backtomygarden.com/secret. Aaron, I just glanced at the clock and our time is whipping by. Now is the time in the show where we play a game called Five Quick Questions.
All right.
This is your chance to share your wisdom and experience with novice gardeners. Are you ready to play?
I'm ready to play.
Question number one, in your opinion, what's the biggest excuse you hear from non-gardeners about why they don't garden?
I think people say they don't have the time or they have a black thumb.
Yeah, black thumb. Is there a cure for that?
Well, I don't. Yes, it's just research. It's just finding out if you put in the right plant for the right space and your conditions. Again, look at natives that already do well in your area. You're much more likely to have success if you put in a plant like a really delicate rose that needs a lot of care and a lot of spraying and fungal sprays and pesticide sprays. Yeah, you're going to have more trouble. But it's more based on what plant you picked, not your color of your thumb.
Awesome. Question two. What's the best gardening advice that you've ever received?
That's an interesting question. A lot of the gardening advice I've probably received has actually been from books because, like I said, not a lot of my neighbors are necessarily passionate gardeners. I would say it probably comes back to natives again. Look to see what's growing in your area. Natives are probably going to be the ones that are well adapted. They're going to be the ones that... that they're not going to have, you know, people have problems with like Japanese beetles on their exotic plants. Well, that's because Japanese beetles evolved to feed on those plants in Asia, and there's not a lot of native predators to the Japanese beetles. But the native plants in your area are probably, most of them, not going to be as appealing to Japanese beetles, so you're not going to have as many problems.
Dynamite. Question number three. This will be interesting because you're a blogger and a writer. Do you have any friends that are awesome gardening bloggers or one or two websites for gardening that you would recommend?
That is a good question. Well, they're sort of virtual friends, I suppose. These are not people I've necessarily met in person. I'm happy to recommend a couple of other blogs. I'm just running over to my blog here, Garden of Aaron, to cheat a little bit. So I like, of course, sometimes it's fun usually to read about... blogs that are sort of in your general area so that you can take tips. I mean, if I read a blog from Alaska or something, I'm probably not going to be able to learn as much as if I read one from Alabama. So yeah, so one of my favorite blogs is from Alabama. It's just called Deb's Garden. And another one that I like a lot is called Clay and Limestone. So as you can, we talked a lot about clay at the beginning, and limestone underlies a lot of that clay in Tennessee, and that is a Tennessee gardening blog. There's one out of Virginia called Casa Mariposa that I like a lot. And then there's one out of Wisconsin called Plant Postings. And those are all, I think, first-rate gardening blogs.
Dynamite. So what we'll do is I'll put those links up on the show notes.
Okay.
And then I will send each of those people a Twitter saying, hey, Aaron was bragging about you on the podcast.
They're great blogs. You learn a lot. I learn a lot from them, so...
Let's go back to books. Question four. Can you recommend a great gardening book, or do you have a personal favorite?
So I'm going to make sure I get this title right, but I'm 99% sure I know it. One of the books I like a lot is called Back to Nature. I'm just going to make sure I have that title right. Sorry, I got it a little bit wrong. The title of the book is called Bringing Nature Home: How You Can Sustain Wildlife with Native Plants, Updated and Expanded. And that's by Douglas W. Tallamy, Tallamy. And he is a professor at University of Delaware, I believe. And again, I've mentioned his name a couple times, but I think he's really has a lot of interesting things to say on native plants and how they can sustain wildlife. another guy who's just a great, amazing source of information is Michael Durr, D-I-R-R, encyclopedia. He's written some encyclopedias of plants. So if you're looking for new ideas, that's great. And then Alan Armitage, A-R-M-I-T-A-G-E, has also written some great books, in sort of encyclopedic books about plants.
Dynamite. Man, you're an awesome guest. Come prepared. Question five.
Yeah.
Have fun with this one. Blank out your mind. Next season, is there anything you've been wanting to experiment with, or is there a plant that you would suggest that every gardener try to grow next season?
Yeah, well, so in terms of what every gardener should have in their garden, some of it's right location specific. I can't tell people in Los Angeles or Miami what to plant. But people who are sort of in Tennessee or in the upper South, Midwest, Mid-Atlantic area, like I said, I think switchgrass, Panicum frugatum, is just a beautiful grass, trouble-free. I would strongly encourage that. I've had great luck with perennial geraniums. So these are the true geraniums, and some specific varieties that I like are Roseanne geranium, and that'll flower again for months and months. Beautiful kind of purple-blue flowers. Biakovo is another nice one, very trouble-free, kind of a good ground cover, which I think is also, we didn't discuss that, but I think, look, a lot of people have issues with weeds, and they either spray weed killer in their garden, which again, I prefer not to spray things, or they put mulch down, which is expensive and or tiring. I think it's better if you can just cover the ground with plants to try to suppress weeds. So a low ground cover plant like geranium, it's not going to get out of hand, and a beautiful plant. Things that I'm excited to try for next year. I certainly have a lot of things I'm planning to add to my garden either this fall or next spring. I'm excited to try ninebark, which I don't grow yet, but I've heard just a great native shrub. Physicarpus is the Latin name on that, Physicarpus apulifolius. I just added a couple wax myrtles. We talked about zone pushing at the beginning of the show. I'm doing a little bit of zone pushing here. I'm taking a chance with these. They are native, but they're native to a little bit warmer coastal areas further south and east, and I just figured they're supposed to be really tough in terms of taking wet and then dry, you know, being able, and there's not a lot of plants that can do that in terms of being able to survive. They're kind of swamp plants, so they can as I understand it, take that really sort of wet inundated soil that'll literally suffocate the roots of a lot of plants, but they can also, they're also supposedly drought tolerant, and they're supposed to produce berries that birds are supposed to love. So I figured if I'm going to take a chance on any plant in terms of zone pushing, they're also supposed to grow really fast and be evergreen or semi-evergreen. So there's a lot to recommend them. I figured I'd take a chance on them.
You know, dear listener, I'm going to do a contest right now. I'm inspired. I want you to go to the main page at backtomygarden.com, and in the top corner, there's a contact us form. If you can name 10 plants that Aaron mentioned in this show, I will send you a prize. I may have broken my personal record for note-taking in a single episode. I have a bit of writer's cramp. Aaron, you're an awesome guest.
Well, thank you, Dave. I'm delighted to be here.
We have to have you back, first of all. And what I want to do, I want to send everybody over to your Twitter, Garden of Aaron, or at Garden of Aaron. Everyone, please share Aaron's stuff off his blog, and let's... keep linking and sharing on social media at www.gardenofaaron.com. Aaron, I'm going to give you the last word today to the listeners. Can you leave us with a pearl of wisdom or a note of encouragement on our gardening adventures?
Ooh, I feel I may have used up all my pearls, but in terms of note of encouragement, again, this kind of goes back to what you said in terms of excuses. If you feel like you have a black thumb, don't give up. There are so many plants out there that are so tough, and I think one thing that's really, so we didn't get to talk about this, if I have to say something that frustrates me sometimes when I'm reading a gardening book or some gardening blogs, not the ones I recommended, is when people make it seem easy. Because I don't know about you, or I mean, I love gardening, but it's not always easy. You're going to have tough days. You're going to have frustrating times when a plant doesn't perform as well as you hoped it would, and I think any gardener who's being honest is going to admit they've killed a lot of plants. And that's how they figured out what's going to survive, and that's how they learned. And it's just a learning process. And if you keep at it, you're going to get better. and it'll be incredibly rewarding, whether it's whether you're gardening for beauty, whether you're gardening to bring butterflies into your garden. I mean, I saw a monarch butterfly flip by the other day, and that was, of course, a really heartwarming sight. Whether you are gardening for food, because you know, I do a little bit of that myself, and I know some people who that's more important for. So I would just say, don't get discouraged if you have setbacks, and just read and share information and learn, and you'll find plants that work for you.
Tremendous. Aaron, I want to say thank you so much for being on the show.
Thanks for giving me the opportunity to be here.
What an awesome show. Hello, garden lover. It's Dave. All of the links, resources, and websites mentioned in this episode will be posted at www.backtomygarden.com/61. If you enjoyed this episode, please come to the website and click share and help us reach even more brand new gardeners. Have an amazing day. Happy gardening.